thank you for tuning in to the Postmodern Realities Podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. I'm Melanie Cogdill, Managing Editor of the Christian Research Journal. It's July 2021, and you're listening to episode 243, which is a conversation about Sherlock Holmes, the iconic fictional private detective created more than 100 years ago by British writer Sir Arthur Conan Doyle. On this episode, I'm joined by Dr. Philip Tallon, who is the Dean of the School of Christian Thought at Houston Baptist University. He is also the author of the book, The Poetics of Evil, and the co-editor of The Philosophy of Sherlock Holmes. Phil has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called The Fall of Sherlock, Investigating the Victorian Detective in a Modern Age. And our subscribers can read his article at our website, equip.org, for free as one of their benefits of being a subscriber. And if you would like to read this online exclusive article and you are not yet a subscriber, head on over to equip.org to subscribe to our magazine. Phil, it's good to have you on.
Oh, always a pleasure.
Well, one thing about Sherlock Holmes is it seems that it's very enduring, and now it's in the public domain, so it seems like a lot of people slap the theme of Sherlock Holmes into a lot of things, but also it's kind of had a resurgence in popular, for sure, television series. So since it was such a long time ago that it was written, tell us a little bit about who Sherlock Holmes is and why he's so well known as a character.
Yes, well, I think Sherlock Holmes is arguably the most famous fictional detective, and he's been around for more than 100 years. Sir Arthur Conan Doyle was the writer of the stories. There are four novellas and over 50 short stories, and right at the very tail end of the 19th century, Doyle started to write. The story goes that he had been a doctor who graduated from the University of Edinburgh, where he had a brilliant professor named Bell, who could diagnose people, you know, based on very limited information, had this kind of brilliant mind. And Doyle was a doctor himself and didn't have many patients, had time on his hands, and began to write short stories, a way to make a little bit of extra money. And murder mysteries were, you know, kind of a new popular art form. And so he began to write these stories of Sherlock Holmes, who had this Bell-like ability to sort of amazingly come up with solutions to questions that puzzled everyone else. The stories became incredibly popular, so popular, in fact, that, you know, I think there was much more demand for Sherlock than there was desire on Sir Arthur Conan Doyle's part to write Sherlock stories. And so after about two installments of the short stories, he decided to kill off his character, Sherlock Holmes. There's much public outcry about this until he eventually resurrected Holmes and brought him back for another good long run. And the character, I think, is enduring because he represents a kind of a very powerful archetype, you know, very sort of single-minded detective, someone who I think now, you know, resembles a lot of people who do knowledge work, who are just almost entirely focused on, you know, diving deep into some particular area of study and almost the exclusion of everything else in the world around them. And Holmes has this monomaniacal quality to him, which comes with certain lack of social graces or indifference to, you know, kind of cultural expectations and so forth, and just a rabid dedication to his craft. And you see this type, this brilliant detective, popping up all, you know, throughout popular culture, and he continues to live on. There's a new series on Netflix right now called The Irregulars that uses Sherlock Holmes. There's a recent comedy movie that uses him. And the identifiable features are the, you know, an incredibly dedicated kind of detective who's, you know, superpower is his intellect and his ability to bring it to bear in criminal investigations.
So maybe some of our younger listeners might have seen the movie Enola Holmes, which is kind of like this fictional story for the younger set, the tweens and the teens, just about a fictional sister that Sherlock Holmes might have had. And the other thing that he's kind of, even if people don't know the story of Sherlock Holmes that much about him, because it was, you know, written over 100 years ago, they certainly have heard the phrase with Holmes and Watson, that he had this kind of sidekick, you know, that was Dr. Watson that, it, you know, is featured in some of the stories. So specifically, though, I would like to know, you know, how did you first come across Sherlock? And, you know, was it through watching television or some of these, you know, the actual books that were written over 100 years ago? Or was it, you know, through something else? There's even been video games made about him.
Yeah, so I think I'm probably my first exposure to the type of Sherlock Holmes or art inspired by Sherlock Holmes was the Disney film The Great Mouse Detective, which basically transposes the world of Sherlock Holmes, Victorian England, and his sort of human concerns down to the level of mice. And so you have, instead of Sherlock Holmes, you have Basil, the detective, and he has a bumbling but affable sidekick, and they solve various mouse-scaled mysteries. And I think that would have been my first exposure, you know, so it has all the trappings of the Holmes stories, gaslit London. But after that, I think that, you know, I began to read the short stories. They're really, you know, quick ripping reads, and, you know, stumbled across them probably first in college and, you know, proceeded to tear through every last, you know, story multiple times, and probably found some book on tape that had a good reading of them and would listen to them as well. And then, you know, and actually I have not spent a lot of time watching, you know, a lot of the old British TV shows. You know, I know that people are, you know, big fans of the old Brett portrayals of Sherlock Holmes. So most of my exposure came through the just actually the books themselves. And then I was a fan of the BBC Sherlock series, although that was quite good. And I edited a book, The Philosophy of Sherlock Holmes, after the Robert Downey Jr. film came out, and kind of when the BBC Sherlock movies were coming out, that generated a little bit of extra interest that bumped our sales a bit.
Yes, I would say when I was younger, I think I found the actual original stories to be a little bit dry, but I was definitely, you know, brought into the whole storyline of it, you know, also his brother and then his arch nemesis, Moriarty, through the BBC, I guess it was the BBC with Benedict Cumberbatch. And that was kind of his breakout role that he had. In fact, several of those actors, that was kind of their breakout role that they did those. And he, the way he portrayed Sherlock was maybe a little bit different than had normally been portrayed. He's a lot younger and he's kind of like this fast talking guy. But, you know, since it's been around for so long, it, you know, it's even held the Guinness World Record for most portrayed, you know, literary character out there. And I mentioned there's even video games about him and, you know, not quite the same as the non-human Dracula. But what do you think is so fascinating about Sherlock Holmes? Is it because he's solving mysteries and people like, you know, a good detective mystery that is, you know, resolves at the end where we can find out, oh, this is who killed this person, or here's the puzzle and how it was solved?
Yeah, it is striking that Holmes has been adapted so frequently. And I think it's interesting, you know, when Doyle is writing the stories, I think one of the things that really contributes to the charm of the original stories and why we come back to them is that, in a sense, Sherlock is, in a way, the furthest removed from us in time of a what feels like someone living in the modern world. He's living in Victorian England. The sun doesn't set on the British Empire. This kind of tentacles reach all over the globe. There's no automobiles. They're still riding around in carriages, and they don't have, you know, typical electricity. It's sort of this gaslit London, but, you know, they have telegrams and trains, and it feels like a very kind of connected, information-drenched modern city that they're living in. And so when you can pull Sherlock into the modern day without, you know, without sort of changing too much, as the BBC series demonstrates, but you do still gain a lot of kind of old world charm and this feeling of antiquity and strangeness when you enter into the Holmes story. So I think the whole atmosphere of the stories is just so rich and fascinating, you know, and it's, again, some of the things have just not changed. So when they adapted the BBC's Sherlock, you know, Watson had been fighting in Afghanistan, right? That was true more than 100 years before of John Watson in the stories, who had come back from being injured in Afghanistan. So these kind of similarities still between the kind of old stories and the new stories that endure. But the charm and the kind of mystique of so much of the work obviously has to do with the pleasure of the construction of these strange mysteries that Holmes encounters. And Doyle does an incredible job of evoking, you know, a really kind of unusual and intriguing setup in a short amount of time. You know, some odd thing has happened. A person has been come to them with an incredible job opportunity that's incredibly bizarre. Some unexplained, you know, occurrence is happening. They don't know how to solve it. They explain these things to Holmes. And then you typically get to see Holmes, you know, in a few sort of short strokes, like doing some things to resolve the mystery. And then he has kind of uncovered it, you know, far before, you know, we expect that he has his flair for the dramatic and often kind of unveil how he's solved the mystery. And so Doyle does a really pleasurable job of setting up something strange and mysterious as a hook. And then, you know, Holmes uncovers that in this, you know, dramatic and fascinating way, often explaining himself how he uses his techniques. And I think that the combination of that atmosphere and setting, and on top of that, you know, really well-constructed mysteries, things that are both mysterious and evocative, strange, but then also really intellectually satisfying as Doyle unpacks them and shows their solutions. And so they're just brilliant. They're brilliant works. The strangeness of the figure of Holmes himself and his pairing with John Watson is also just a really iconic and powerful synthesis. I mean, so you have with Holmes, you know, you have someone who's detached from, you know, most other relationships, has few friends. He doesn't seek out, you know, social life. He's dedicated to his work. And with Watson, you have this really loyal companion, someone who's good with people. He's in a helping, caring profession, that of medicine. And he accompanies Holmes, sort of softens Holmes, helps Holmes to sort of complement his weak spots, but then also complements Holmes in that Watson himself is also a brilliant storyteller, right? Pretty much every page of telling us about Sherlock Holmes is written by Watson himself. And so he has this kind of literary knack. So they're this powerful duo that obviously we just keep returning to and again and again in storytelling. And it's just, you know, an incredibly iconic and powerful formula that all kinds of TV shows and other films have recognized the strength of and continue to use.
You're listening to episode 243 of the Postmodern Realities podcast. Today's guest is Dr. Phil Tallon. He has written an online exclusive feature article for the Christian Research Journal, and it's called The Fall of Sherlock, Investigating the Victorian Detective in a Modern Age. And if you're a subscriber to our journal, you can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. If you're not already a subscriber and would like to read the article, please go to equip.org and subscribe for $33.50. In addition, of course, as I say every week, you can help us out if a subscription is not in your budget to give us a tip, which you can do if you go to magazine@equip.org and Postmodern Realities. Any of the landing pages has a tip link where you can click on there to give us a small tip of $3 or $5, something small like that, to help us out. And there's something new. We are going to have a contest for a free subscription to the Christian Research Journal if we can get to 100 ratings on Apple Podcasts. Now, we've been doing the podcast for almost 5 years. In August, it will be 5 years that we've been doing this and 250 episodes. And so if by December 31st, we reach 100 ratings. Now that could be starred ratings or actual written reviews, which are, you know, just a short sentence or two. Anyone who has posted a written review from July 1st forward till the end of the year, December 31st, will be entered into a randomized drawing to receive a free subscription where you can have this online exclusive access to articles that we feature on the podcast. And so please tell a friend about this podcast. If you have been waiting to write a review for us, please head on over to Apple Podcasts, search for Postmodern Realities, and we will prayerfully get to 100 ratings. I hope that happens so that we can give away this subscription to the journal, a one-year subscription. And thank you for your partnership. Well, you actually edited a book about Sherlock Holmes called The Philosophy of Sherlock Holmes. So what kind of philosophical topics should people think about as it relates to Sherlock Holmes? I mean, I think one thing about detectives in general in that kind of genre is they're searching for truth, you know, to discover what really happened or what can we know about something. And so what is it about the search for truth and just philosophy and, you know, being applied to this kind of iconic detective character? I mean, there's some other ones too that Agatha Christie, like Miss Marple and so forth, or Hercule Poirot or somebody like that. But with Sherlock himself also, what are some kind of topics in that realm that Christians should think about as they approach, you know, kind of digging in or discovering for the first time Sherlock Holmes?
Yeah, well, people who are interested in apologetics and sort of rational discourse around things like the existence of God or sort of credibility of truth claims, I think will be interested in thinking through just reasoning itself. You know, how is it that we move from little bits of evidence toward a conclusion? And Holmes often calls what he does deduction, right? It's really not deduction. Sometimes it is. He actually does make some deductive reasoning. But for the most part, he's actually using a sort of inference. It's sometimes called abduction or inference the best explanation. Or Holmes is basically looking at a sort of set of evidence before him, and he's imagining what would be the best explanation for the things that are in front of us. And that's part of what makes Holmes such a powerful thinker, is that he has a powerful imagination, right? So he's able to sort of see things that everybody else is also looking at, but then to kind of, you know, move toward what might have caused such a thing. So anyone who thinks about, you know, arguing for God's existence or so forth, is probably engaged in some sort of similar reasoning. We have the world around us as a kind of a set of data. We have certain experiences and, you know, we have authorities telling us certain things. And so then you move from this experience to what best explains this, what best explains our, you know, inner sense of morality, what best explains the fact that we possess consciousness, or what best explains the credible design and beauty in the world, right? So perhaps like Sherlock, we would also make an inference the best explanation and say, well, some sort of creator is the best evidence for such a thing. There are other philosophical topics that within the Holmes stories that are, you know, are worth thinking about. One of the things I just mentioned is, you know, that Holmes and Watson are quite good friends. I think that, you know, friendship and human relationship and how that's connected to virtue is a really rich topic that anyone who's engaged in kind of moral reasoning needs to take account of. And so Aristotle, you know, back in his Nicomachean Ethics, spends a good bit of time in his Ethics talking about friendship and how important it is and how the friend is like a second self and they match you and they bring the best out of you. And you see this clearly with Holmes and Watson, that they have this friendship, a friendship not just of use or pleasure, not just they just kind of enjoy hanging out together, but actually a friendship of virtue. They improve one another through their mutual connection. They challenge one another. They respect one another. And so, you know, the relationships throughout. Holmes also has some interesting enemies, too. And so we can apply similar sorts of relational thinking about Holmes's enemies, and maybe by thinking about Holmes's enemies, we can understand the sort of different kinds of oppositional conflicts we have in our life. Sometimes we have rivals, like Holmes says. Lestrade is a kind of rival early on, who eventually becomes a friend. They're basically competing for the same space. He has sort of competitors in the games. So you might think about Irene Adler as a woman that he's trying to get a photograph from at the behest of a client, but she defeats him in this sort of competition. And then also he's fascinated by her. And then, of course, he has a true archenemy, a kind of foe in Moriarty, someone who is as powerful as he is, but dedicated toward wickedness, you know. And so these different relationships, I think, can be illuminating about our own relationships if we reflect on them metaphorically or metaphysically. And so you have these different dimensions of Holmes's work that touch on philosophical topics, and I think there's a lot to unpack there as we think through Holmes philosophically.
So in your article, you mentioned different portrayals of Sherlock that, you know, sometimes highlight some negative aspects of his character. And I don't know about you, but I think that one that did was the more recent BBC adaptation that made actor Benedict Cumberbatch famous from that. And I don't know what adaptations you're thinking of, but in that, he actually has been interviewed, the actor that he was portraying Sherlock as kind of a sociopath. I don't know that I would have ever thought of Sherlock Holmes as a sociopath, but what are adaptations that you think kind of play up some just weaknesses and flaws in Sherlock?
Well, the two recent ones from Netflix both have paler imitations of Sherlock. So in Enola Holmes, we have a kind of an ineffectual Sherlock, not even a particularly interesting portrayal. But in the Irregulars, which is a new kind of young adult focused TV show, though perhaps not even appropriate for young adults, there's Sherlock portrayed there as a really washed out drug addict, you know, whose glory days are behind him, who's kind of barely functional. And they are playing up an element of Holmes's own biography from the stories, which is that Holmes uses morphine and cocaine, as indicated in the stories, both of which were legal at the time in London. And in at least one of the stories, we read that Watson talks about having helped to wean his friend off of drugs, though he worries that, you know, if he doesn't stay busy enough, that his bad habit, which is not dead, it's just merely sleeping, might then reemerge. And so the Irregular certainly amplifies this. Watson says that Holmes's drug use, you know, threatened to check his effectiveness as a detective. But obviously in this portrayal, he's just a total mess. It just completely destroys his career. I think there are deeper issues in some of the portrayals. This is certainly the case in most of the modern portrayals, is that they really lean into Holmes as a pretty uncaring and often rude person. The Benedict Cumberbatch portrayal, it's certainly the case. And it's also the case in Elementary, which is a lighter and kind of less grim modern adaptation of Holmes and Watson set in modern day New York. But one thing that's really notable about Holmes in the original stories is that while he's often unconcerned with, you know, sort of standard social conventions, he comprehends them. You know, he knows what's expected of them, but he's chosen a kind of a different life. Watson describes him as being bohemian, you know, sort of unconventional in how he lives his life, arranges his home and so forth. Obviously, his work habits are incredibly irregular and he's uninterested in, you know, socializing and so forth. But when he's dealing with, you know, high class people, or he's dealing with someone that he, you know, cares to interact with well, he's able to, you know, adopt the appropriate manners to kind of honor the person that he's talking to. And so what we find is that Holmes's indifference to social expectations, it doesn't come out of any lack of compassion or empathy for other people, really just more out of a dedication to his craft and a disinterest in trying to work too hard to advance himself socially. And I think that that's relevant because as Watson portrays Holmes, and I think as Doyle intended to portray Holmes, Holmes is still heroic. He's a virtuous person overall. Like he seeks to care, you know, for people who come to him with a case, who are in need. So he's typically responsive to people who are in great need. He's very hostile to people who display vice or, you know, are harming other people. And so he's a heroic type. He has heroic virtues and, you know, he's incredibly brave and so forth. And I think that portraying Holmes as a high-functioning sociopath, as BBC intends to do, you know, really is a, I mean, it's a fascinating portrayal of Holmes, but it's a real disservice to the original portrayal of the hero. And we can look at different reasons why that might be, why in our own age, perhaps we don't find virtue believable. I think in many ways, part of the thing that issue we have now with portraying Holmes is that kind of classical virtues are just simply forgotten or misunderstood by modern storytellers.
So it's interesting that you say that, because in the specific short story, The Final Problem, you know, Watson is talking about Holmes and he's describing him as the best and wisest man I have ever known. And yet in some of the examples that you just gave of more recent adaptations, do you think that they even at all give the impression that Sherlock is a very best and wise man?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, and Watson there is calling back to Plato's description of the death of Socrates, right? That he's the best and wisest of men, and the death of, showing the death of Holmes. And yeah, it, you know, and it doesn't seem like a, someone who's a rude, high-functioning sociopath who kind of flaunts, intentionally flaunts, caring for the needs and feelings of others would, you know, we wouldn't want to call such a person best and wise. You know, quite the opposite. I mean, perhaps best at detection. Clearly, that's the piece of the Sherlock Holmes mythos that all the stories are that portray him straightforwardly are keen to carry on. There are comedic portrayals of Sherlock Holmes where he's not even particularly good at detection. But the you know, that's the one element of DeBrulle Holmes' superpower that we hold on to. But the other things are, you know, perhaps a little bit harder to see, which is that, you know, Holmes shows great industriousness, hard work, bravery, chivalrous concern for women who are in danger, and also genuine care for his friend Watson. You know, they may have a kind of a very sort of male relationship where they never talk about their feelings, particularly at least a few points, like in the Adventure of the Three Garadibs. I think Watson is injured and, you know, Holmes shows all this concern and he says, it was almost worth getting shot just to know that, like, deep underneath all those things, you know, like I could, he showed his heart and that he truly cared for Watson. So it is striking to me in a way that our modern, I think, interest in exposing the kind of flaws and failings and sort of taking heroes down a level, you know, as applied so much to Sherlock Holmes. I mean, I think it's so much of the kind of modern storytelling interest that we try and kind of complicate both our heroes and also our villains. You know, there's this kind of move toward the center. The heroes are much more flawed. The villains are perhaps misunderstood better than they might otherwise be. So there's been a large move to kind of find redemptive sides of, you know, various monstrous figures. One could do a whole examination of the way that the portrayal of Dracula, for instance, has changed similarly over the last 100 and so years. And I think there's some advantages to that. It is true that, you know, people are a mix of good and bad, and that one of the, I think, intellectual virtues we should possess is to understand that people are neither wholly good nor wholly bad. But it's funny that in our modern portrayals of Holmes, it seems that we find a much more flawed Holmes to be more believable.
You know, why is it that modern adaptations do lean into, like you're talking about, Sherlock's flaws more? Is it because this idea of a person who can solve all these mysteries seems too perfect? In other words, now we have superheroes, so we kind of don't expect, well, those are superheroes, like the Marvel heroes or the DC heroes. So they're expected to have, you know, just be able to do these incredible things. Whereas back in the day, you know, over 100 years ago when he was writing these stories, you know, Sherlock Holmes is just a human. I mean, he's not even like Dracula. He doesn't have any kind of secret or supernatural thing about him. He's just somebody who's really smart. And if you do that, does it make him less relatable? So maybe in the modern context, we have to give him flaws, because certainly in Sherlock, I would think in the BBC Sherlock, even Moriarty, you were mentioning that a little bit, you know, just giving more oomph, I guess, to the villains, because it's not, Moriarty is almost like someone who can battle Sherlock at his level. So you're not totally rooting against him 100%, because he is really fascinating. So is that just a particularly modern spin because the actual Sherlock Holmes of 100 years ago would be too hard for modern audiences to relate to?
That's a good point. I mean, I don't know as to why this move. It is the case that in terms of our sort of contemporary Hollywood storytelling, that almost all heroes have a notable flaw that they will have to struggle with. Now, so that's something that we're looking to introduce. Now, Holmes already has flaws, though. Like, these are, Watson is really keenly aware of them in a certain way. So it seems like there's something additional being added here. We're leaning into those flaws even more. And so, you know, perhaps it's the case that, you know, we simply want kind of more and more extreme portrayals of characters' flaws in order to find them believable or some such thing. Or perhaps, you know, maybe we live in an age where we are somewhat skeptical of a hero. And what we really think, all we can identify with is a protagonist, you know, someone who's, we're on their side because of the sort of fictive setup and the desires of the characters, but we don't identify anyone anymore as being a true hero. Now, I don't know that I think that's absolutely the case, because I do think there are still stories of heroes, but there is a kind of narrative logic that we see working, it seems, on superhero stories, for instance, an attempt in a lot of modern portrayals to, you know, make much more complicated or darker the, you know, heroes that at one time had been more noble. That's much more the case in recent DC adaptations, in the Marvel adaptations. I think we've had a lot more kind of straightforwardly noble characters. Those films have done far better than the DC movies. Perhaps this suggests that actually there's a great hunger for straightforwardly noble and heroic and admirable characters that we can look up to. Yeah, I'm not exactly sure, you know, why this is. Maybe it comes down to something as simple as that we no longer find virtue credible. We just think that deep down everyone has these fundamental flaws that we'll kind of be beset with for the entirety of our lives.
So for someone who's not familiar with Sherlock, where should they begin? Because do you think some of these modern adaptations that you've mentioned, do they really capture Sherlock Holmes, or should, you know, people go back to the original source material and, you know, get out those more than 100-year-old short stories?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, I realize I've spent a good bit of time, you know, perhaps saying negative things about the BBC Sherlock series. I think that it is a fabulously smart and well-done series, wonderfully acted. And for the most part, all the episodes are of good quality. There's a little bit of variation in there, especially toward the end. But, you know, if someone's not a reader, I do think that checking out BBC Sherlock would be a fine place to start. You know, there are so many wonderful readings of Sherlock Holmes now available, fabulous actors doing the readings that, you know, if you want to maybe not sit down with the book, but you're interested, I Hound of the Baskervilles is absolutely one of my favorites of the Holmes novellas. I think it's a wonderful one to start with. The earlier short stories are better. And so the original Adventures of Sherlock Holmes is, I think, the, you know, another really great place to start. And the stories are quick, you know, you can get through one in a single sitting. Short story has all the benefits of that unity effect that Poe talked about. It's just sit down and in kind of one bite, you know, you can take down the whole story and just relish in the adventure. Not all Holmes stories are actually really focused on mysteries. Some of them are just adventure stories. They get into some interesting situation, and we get to go through it with them. And I find the most of Holmes' early short stories are enchanting.
Well, finally, I want to end with some fun rapid-fire questions for Phil after we've been talking about TV. It's summertime right now, as I mentioned. And so as you've been home all this time, we can now go back to the movies. So would you rather stream stuff at home or go to the theater?
Oh, I think go to the theater. Our local theater did close down, so we do have to drive a bit further. But it was actually a local theater, is a big AMC. But I do like getting out, and I think that it just helps so much to sit down and kind of immerse yourself in the theater, and you just have to sit there for 2+ hours and, you know, be kind of fully present with the artistic experience.
So you were talking about how maybe certain things about having virtue in a character doesn't seem as popular today. We're kind of all in the superhero realm these days. So if you could have any superpower, what would it be?
My son asks me this question a fair amount. You know, I've always been partial to the Flash's super speed. I thought that'd be just incredibly thrilling to run on water. And I could also crank through all my emails in, you know, just 10 minutes or so instead of the hours and hours that it takes me.
And for summertime, what's your favorite summer food?
Yeah, well, I think, of course, I am partial to nice sliced watermelon, and lately we've been doing a lot of grilling out, so probably just classic burgers on the grill in summertime.
Well, thanks, Phil, for being a guest again on the Postmodern Realities podcast.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
You've been listening to episode 243 of the Postmodern Realities podcast, brought to you by the Christian Research Institute and the Christian Research Journal. Today's guest has been Dr. Philip Tallon. He has written an online exclusive feature article called The Fall of Sherlock, Investigating the Victorian Detective in a Modern Age. And our subscribers can read his article for free at our website, equip.org. We'd like to connect to you, so please subscribe to the Bible Answer Man YouTube channel and join in the conversation in the comment section and in the live chat when we have premiere videos. Please follow the Bible Answer Man page on Facebook and on Twitter. You will find us at Hank Hanegraaff, Bible Answer Man, Christian Research Institute, and Christian Research Journal, as well as on Instagram at the Bible Answer Man account. You won't want to miss every Monday through Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern when we live stream the Bible Answer Man broadcast, hosted by CRI President Hank Hanegraaff at our website, equip.org. In addition, please subscribe to the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank gets out of the studio and into his study and engages in in-depth, free-flowing, essential Christian conversations on critical issues with some of the most interesting, informative, and inspirational people on the planet. You'll want to head on over to equip.org because there you're going to find thousands of free resources for you in articles and past broadcasts, our podcasts, and videos. And thank you for all the ways in which you partner with the Christian Research Institute.